Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We usually think of wild animals as being remote from us, far away in nature. But as we find out, that view is often wrong.
I was up in New Hampshire recently visiting a friend, and he's got bears coming into his backyard a couple times a week. And sure enough, we were hiking not far from his house, and we saw a bear ambling up the trail in front of us. I wasn't quite sure whether to have that be an exciting, thrilling experience or one that was kind of scary.
And Jim, where I live on the Connecticut coast, we just got an alert in our neighborhood to keep our dogs in the house because there have been packs of coyotes roaming around and they could be trouble.
The line between our civilized lives and wild, unpredictable nature seems to have gotten a little thinner lately.
Today's episode, When Nature Hits Back, with science writer Mary Roach.
So I'm always policing what I'm writing, thinking, you know, is there some way to make this fresh, funny, weird? Is there some way, some spice I can add here to keep the person from putting the book down or throwing it across the room?
Our show is about fixes.
Yeah, how to make the world a better place.
How do we fix it?
How do we fix it?
Mary Roach is one of my favorite science writers. She writes funny, engaging books on topics you might think would creep people out a little bit, like what happens to dead bodies, or things that are still a little taboo, like her book Bonk on human sexuality.
Mary returns to How Do We Fix It for a second visit. The last time we spoke with her was about Grunt, a book about the science of humans at war.
Continuing her run of books with punchy one-word titles, Mary Roach's latest is called Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law. It's all about what happens when humans and nature come into conflict.
Mary joins us from the San Francisco Bay Area in California. Welcome back to How Do We Fix It?
Thank you. Lovely to be back.
In pre-modern times, people were afraid of being attacked by animals for good reason. But over the past century or so, most of us who live in cities or suburbs assume that wild animals are somewhere out there in nature, not in our backyards, and not really an immediate problem for us. Is that changing? Are these encounters becoming more common?
Yeah, for two reasons. One, we're moving, we are expanding. We as a species, urban areas are pushing out into terrain that didn't used to have any humans. So we're moving into their terrain and they're expanding. The populations of these animals are doing well. Up through the 70s, there were bounties on these large animals. They were killed as, you know, varmints, as threats to agriculture or to livestock. Did a pretty good job wiping out large numbers of carnivores in particular, and also bears, which are omnivores. So the populations are recovering, and that's a good thing, but they're recovering to a point where people are starting to see them more. They're getting all up in people's business, and some people don't like that. And hello, human-wildlife conflict.
In researching your book, Mary, you got to take a trip to Aspen, Colorado, but instead of skiing or hiking, you found yourself exploring back alleys in the middle of the night. Tell us what you were doing there.
Yeah, it was about 3:30 a.m. Aspen has a lot of restaurants, a lot of tourists. So there's this sort of restaurant row, and the alley behind it, which doesn't see a lot of tourists, is where all the dumpsters are. And supposedly those are all bear resistant, and that's supposed to solve the problem. And but so I was there with a bear human conflict researcher named Stuart Breck. I made him set his alarm for 3 a.m. so we could go to the back alley and see if we could see a crime in action. See one of the bears doing its thing, breaking into a dumpster. And yeah, I was, you know, expecting probably we'd get up at 3 a.m. and see nothing, because that's how this crap goes, I found with this book. But in fact, we got there and we drove past the turn off into the alley, and there was a bag, white bag, split open, garbage spread everywhere, the scene of the crime. So we got out, and within 3 minutes, I would say, one of the bears came back to keep going through, because this is good stuff. I mean, this is burrata and sustainably farmed salmon and venison chops, and this is good eating here in this bag of garbage. So the bear was highly motivated to come back. In fact, two bears.
And the bears aren't even that afraid of the humans coming around.
That's right. They've learned two things. One, this is some good eating back here in this alley. And number two, these humans, they just sort of stand around and look at us. They don't seem to be harming us. So let's not worry about them and get back to the food. So yeah, they looked up when they saw us. They kind of, what's that? Doesn't seem to be a threat. Went back to the food.
But there are examples of bears attacking people. Are those cases on the rise in the U.S.?
This year, we've had three bear attacks, fatal bear attacks, which is high. If you look back over the, you know, from 2010 till now, it fluctuates from 0 to 3 per year. It's an average of 2. I'd say you can't really say at this point there's a trend in the number of fatal attacks. The drought is bringing more animals out of the woods. So it's kind of hard to call it. Are we seeing, you know, more attacks? And mountain lions, it's so rare that somebody is killed by a mountain lion. I mean, you'll, like, a whole decade will go by where no one is killed in this country by a mountain lion. We're just not on their menu, first of all. And second of all, they're very stealthy. You know, they tend to be caught on doorbell cameras these days. So they've been sneaking around in the middle of the night, grabbing chickens and cats and things all along. But lately, we are more in the suburbs. I'm more in the LA area. The people are catching them on their Nest cameras. And so that contributes to this sense that suddenly they're everywhere.
So when nature breaks the law, which is the subtitle of your book, that's an intriguing thought. What drew you to the subject? Why are you interested in these wildlife human encounters?
One thing that really caught my attention was this. I stumbled onto this 1906 book called Criminal Prosecution and Capital Punishment of Animals. And it detailed dozens of cases from the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, in which animals that had broken our laws were actually put on trial and sometimes hung or put in prison. And I was like, what? Really? That doesn't seem like a good way to deal with it. The case that I mentioned in the book was like 1659, Lombardy province in Italy. Caterpillars were going in and eating some of the crops, as they'll do. And so there were summons posted on trees in the region telling the caterpillars that they were to appear in court on this particular date, at which point they would be assigned legal representation. And it wasn't a joke. It was actually done. And of course, by the time the date came around, no caterpillars showed up. They pupated. So they were long gone. And everything turned out okay because they stopped raiding the crops because they'd become butterflies or moths or whatever the hell they were. But I just remember thinking, well, obviously the legal system is not going to provide the answer here. What do we do? What does science do about that? I'm always looking for some weird branch of science to roll around in and check out and see what's there. So that was part of it.
You also traveled to the foothills of the Himalayas in India, where leopard attacks are a big problem. This kind of human-animal conflict can have really tragic consequences. It sounds pretty scary.
It is scary there. There are mountainous farming communities that have seen a lot of out-migration. So there are a lot of the men who were tending the fields, mostly men, are leaving, going into the cities to find work. And so there's a lot of communities that have been kind of abandoned, or they're far fewer people. So the terrain is kind of rewilded. There's still people living there. But there's lots of places for leopards to hunt and they like to have cover when they hunt. So a lot of children, 41% of the attacks are on children under 10. And there's a lot of times they don't have a school bus, so they're walking home at dusk. That's a dangerous time. Leopards are out hunting. So it is quite a problem for sure. It's hard to imagine, you know, that being attacked. I mean, we don't have that issue here with our big cats.
Right now, with the COVID pandemic, the most frightening threats from wildlife come with disease. COVID-19 originated with bats in China, possibly from a wildlife market or a lab. How does this affect our thinking about the relationship between animals and humans?
Well, yeah, anytime you think about other species posing a threat to us, I immediately go to bacteria and viruses. You know, to me, it's almost hilarious the amount of fretting and concern and media coverage that goes toward the occasional large mammal attack, when literally hundreds of thousands of people are harmed / killed by microorganisms. And again, it's a matter of our terrain overlapping with their terrain. And so you have zoonoses, these illnesses that were originally just in that one species, and now you're finding out that it can jump.
And so do you think there'll be more of this?
Yeah, I do. I'm not a zoonoses person, but yes. You know, almost every year there's some new flu, or, you know, H1N1. There's always something in the news, some new illness that we're all coping with, coming down with. I love when the CDC tries to trace it back. They were looking, you know, in the case of, I guess it was H1N1, they're looking for chicken zero. We're like tracing it back to the original, you know, chicken to human transmission. I just thought that would be a good book title, Chicken Zero.
We've been talking about animals being a threat to us, but humans are generally a much bigger threat to animals. I mean, I don't know how many tens of millions of animals are killed by cars every year. And you spent some time with a group that's trying to reduce the number of collisions, specifically between cars and big animals like deer. What are they working on?
Sure. I spent some time with Travis DeVault, who's a researcher with the National Wildlife Research Center. He's been working on, it's a bar that you attach to the front of the vehicle that illuminates the front of the vehicle, so that any animal, deer in particular, we were looking at then, would be able to see, oh, this is a large vehicle coming at me. Because at night, at dusk, when most of the impacts happen, all the animal is seeing is these two pinpoints of light, and it just stands there going, "Huh, it's funny, pinpoints the light, huh? You know, and then it's harder to tell this thing is coming closer to you. And so that's the whole deer in the headlights problem. They're standing, looking, not realizing those little dots of light are a thing coming closer. And so by light, by having this bar of this lighting that would light up the front, the grill essentially of the truck, you tell the animal, time to get out of the way, large thing coming at you. These creatures haven't evolved. The processors haven't evolved to calculate, you know, a car on a freeway. So they're off. They get their estimates wrong. The vehicle hits them because they don't realize it's coming that fast.
You did a ton of reporting, a lot of traveling for Fuzz, for the book. What's the weirdest or funniest example you can cite of an illegal animal encounter with a human?
There was a bizarre instance of gull vandalism at the Vatican. The Vatican, every Easter, does this amazing, huge, massive, elaborate floral display in St. Peter Square, where the Pope comes out and says Mass on Easter morning. It takes them hours to set it up the night before, and they finish around, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And then they come back in the morning, in this case, and the daffodils are knocked over, the roses are pulled out and strewn around like there was some diva ballerina's last performance. It was this just mayhem, and it was these gulls. So that was an interesting and bizarre one. And I went to the Vatican the day before and the day of Easter. They had hired a man who invented a kind of a laser scarecrow, which is, it's kind of like disco lights, only just green, and it sort of spins around, and it's got these, you know, the laser beam is hitting all the flowers, etc. And because the some birds perceive a laser beam as kind of a stick coming at them, and they call this the stick effect.
This is How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
And we're speaking with Mary Roach, author of Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law. More coming up.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So the basic theme of your book is what happens when the needs of animals or nature and the needs of humans come into conflict. What are some of the things we can do to reduce the risk to both? I mean, even starting in our own backyard, say a friend of mine, you're from New Hampshire. I was up there the other day. My buddy has bears in his backyard a couple times a week. What can we do about that?
Well, if bears aren't causing any problems, we can enjoy it. That's the best thing. I've got raccoons, possums, and skunks that regularly go back and forth in our yard. And I like to put out a wildlife camera and just take photographs of them because they're pretty cool. It becomes a problem when the creature has realized that you've got a nice place to nest and raise young, say under your deck or in your attic. That's a problem. And in that case, you can practice exclusion. It's called exclusion. And that's figuring out how they're getting in and blocking that access point. If they're already in there, that's a little trickier. There are people who, wildlife control operators that use humane methods. Like say you have a family of squirrels in your attic, then you're concerned about them chewing through the wiring, which is a concern. They'll install a one-way door so that the animals can get out, but not back in. Because if you were to close it off when let's say the young are in there and the mother is out foraging for food, and you then seal it, then you've trapped the babies in there and the adult outside, and that's not very humane. But there are people who are good at that. They're humane wildlife control operators, and there's some good information. The Humane Society of the United States has some good information about how to find one of those people, because sometimes they'll use the word humane, but they're not really doing anything humane. So those are some of the things that you can try to do to minimize the hassle that they may be causing.
Mary, you've made a career writing about sometimes difficult, often yucky topics in an upbeat, entertaining way. Your books are also well-reported. They're scientifically accurate. What's your secret sauce? Why do you think people really enjoy reading your books?
Beats the crap out of me. I don't know, but I'm very happy about it.
It's such an earnest question.
You know what it is? I think I'm very insecure and I have a lot of self-loathing. So I'm writing constantly with this imaginary reader looking over my shoulder going, well, that's not very interesting. So I'm always policing what I'm writing, thinking, you know, is there some way to make this fresh, funny, weird? Is there some way, some spice I can add here to keep the person from putting the book down or throwing it across the room? I think I just live with that internal critic. I'm writing and researching to entertain myself. I'm going to the Vatican because why wouldn't you go to the Vatican? I don't need to have gull vandalism in the book. It's not critical that I report on gulls and lasers, but I don't know, the Vatican on Easter Sunday, that's a good setting. Got to have that in. Got to go to Rome.
So, you know, speaking as the former editor of a mainstream science magazine, I have to say that I'm really often appalled by the poor quality of scientific reporting in especially the news media, especially when you have reporters who aren't primarily science reporters. Why is it so hard for journalists to get science right?
I find a lot of bad science reporting, not in the science press so much as just the general press, just a lot of headlines that are coming from preclinical trials, say, where it's been tested on a bunch of cells, or it's just, we're not to the point where this is headline news about a breakthrough discovery. I think it comes from an inability to properly judge a study. How big was the population, the subject population? How well was it controlled? What's this journal? Do they have a good, what is it, the influence factor? What is that called?
What you're talking about is how often the articles are cited by other peer-reviewed journals.
Right, right. There are ways to critically assess this piece of information. And a press release from the company is not the way to do that. As you mentioned, it's people who don't have a background in science reporting who are nonetheless reporting science. And that appalls me.
In last week's episode of How Do We Fix It? On the 9/11 attacks, we talked about conspiracy theories. There's a great deal of information about scientific matters in particular. Recent examples include the falsehoods about COVID vaccines. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think social media and the internet have provided us a platform to reach a much larger audience. So if you're saying something that has an inherent appeal, an intuitive appeal, you put it out there and people pick it up and they retweet it or they repost it and it finds its way out to a far broader audience. And people see and believe what they want to believe. and not necessarily what's accurate or what's best researched. So I kind of have to blame the internet and social media.
Richard, I both love your working title for this book, Animal Vegetable Criminal, right? Wasn't that?
Yes.
Was that in? And I think that's the title being used in the UK, but why did you change it for the US?
Oh, God, it's such a sad story. Okay. Yes, Animal Vegetable Criminal. I basically wrote a book around a title here. I loved that title so much. That's why there's a chapter on killer trees, because we had to add some vegetable matter.
Just for listeners, this was a chapter on what they do about very tall trees that might at some point topple over and kill some tourists in a particular forest preserve, right?
Yes, they're called, and this is a technical term, danger trees. Danger trees. So yeah, Animal Vegetable Criminal. Everybody loved that title. You know, it's a play on animal vegetable mineral. It's so great. Okay, here's what happens. Early part of this year in the UK, apparently Mark Bittman isn't such a threat because they kept it Animal Vegetable Criminal. But, you know, fuzz as in police, fuzz as in fuzzy animal. I get it, but I'm not sure all young people know that fuzz is slang for police. So, you know, there may be some people scratching their heads, but there's always people scratching their heads over my titles.
Mary Roach, thanks very much for joining us on How Do We Fix It?
Well, thanks so much, you guys. It's my first day of interviews, so it was great to share it with you guys.
Richard, you're always a champ with the recommendations. What have you got for us this week?
Well, this isn't about weird animal encounters. This is about odd human encounters. And it's a show, Jim, that you recommended that I watch probably a couple of years ago. And it's Never Have I Ever. It's a wonderful, funny, light, very well acted and well written show on Netflix about the adventures of first generation people from India living in the Los Angeles area. And it's just great. The star is this girl who's about 16 or 17 years old, and what happens to her at her high school and also her relationship with her mom. It's great.
I agree. It's a really charming new type of sitcom.
Again, that's Never Have I Ever on Netflix, and we are now moving to our conversation, Jim.
Yeah, so it's always a pleasure to talk with Mary Roach. When you have an opportunity to work with writers of that caliber, it's really, it's something special. And reading her book and other things she's written, it makes me think about what makes good science journalism good. One thing that makes a great magazine-style or book-style science report good is that the writer actually goes to the place and talks to the researchers, brings them to life as people. So there's a narrative to the story. You can combine that with accurate science reporting and you get the facts right. I think we all learn more and understand what we're learning better if it is immersed in that kind of storytelling with interesting characters and scenes.
Mary didn't talk about this in this interview, but she has in other settings, the importance of fact checkers. There are many publishers that don't employ nearly as many fact checkers as they did in the past.
Well, this is why the collapse of traditional revenue models for journalism is so heartbreaking.
We really have to be much more careful and more humble when it comes to approaching attempts at objectivity and listening to different points of view.
Yeah, humble, admitting what you don't know and not being too quick to say, oh, you know, this is absolutely true or this has been completely debunked, but rather people are still working on this. We'll give you the best information we can right now, but this is not a final word on the topic.
That's our final word on the topic. Thanks to Mary Roach, author of Fuzz. And as always, thank you to our producer, Miranda Schaefer. Davies Content publishes this show. We are podcast consultants. Learn more at daviescontent.com. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.